There goes the Daverhood.
The guy David Lefkowitz is here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Ah, two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, twirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood, and it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Yes, I'm doing both phrases to open this episode of Dave's Gone By, our 324th episode of the program, airing on this January 23rd, 2010, an episode that is speedily delivered to your ears from me on what turns out to be my birthday. Nothing I'd rather be doing on my birthday than sitting here talking to you and being with you on the radio. I got a very special announcement about that, too. So this is going to be a really cool birthday episode of the show, as well as something very nostalgic, which I think is kind of appropriate. I just turned 46 years old, and it's been a very tumultuous few months in my life. I mean, people who've been following the program know that in the summer we moved from New York to Northern Colorado, and I had lived in New York or around it all my life. So this was a big change, and we've had all sorts of stuff going on with family and with our pets and with my wife's job at the school out here, and now I'm teaching at the school out here as well, and it's been mostly good. So, you know, obviously I'm very thankful for that. But it's still been a bit of a roller coaster ride between my 45th birthday and today, my 46th. And I'm glad that you're here to share it with me, both on davesgoneby.org, where you can listen to not only this new episode of Dave's Gone By, but the 323 other episodes. Actually, I think we're missing two. They were lost to the ozone. But all the other episodes are right there, available to listen to for free anytime at all. And here's two pieces of big news involving the show. One is just a little personal triumph, that we got our .com back. Davesgoneby.com is back in the fold. We had lost it for various reasons. It had to do with, at one point we had a rather, I won't say unscrupulous, he was just a little young and incompetent, this fellow who was dealing with our domain names and other computer stuff that we were doing, and he lost control of the name, and for like a week it was a porn site, because somebody was pointing it there because they were angry at him, and then we just kind of lost it, period. And it was available from some guy who clung on to it and wanted to sell it back to us, and even if I had the money, I really wouldn't have done it. I don't really believe in that buy and hold a domain name thing. So, whatever. He let it go. It eventually went back to that who is domain thing where anybody can pick him up if you decide to get it. So, yes, as of a week ago, davesgoneby.com is, again, the official website of this radio program. However, you can still hear us, of course, on davesgoneby.org as well. So that's a nice little happy piece of news. I guess it illustrates the old adage, good things come to those who wait. I've waited several years to be able to say the phrase davesgoneby.com again, and it feels really kind of good. But the other radio-oriented thing is, of course, this program is now internet-only. It's a podcast. It's a stream, and that's fine. But, you know, I like being on regular radio, too, and haven't been there since I left WTVB back in late spring, early summer. So I wanted a little bit of an opportunity to go back and do radio, not necessarily this particular program. Well, I'm getting my shot. I'm teaching and taking classes at the University of Northern Colorado, and what do you know? small as it is and diminished as it is from what it kind of used to be a few years back, the school still has a radio station. It, too, is internet only, but at least they still have it. They used to have an FM band, but they didn't quite treat it properly, and they didn't fill out the legal paperwork, and blah-de-blue, they lost that, and they almost lost the stream into the dorms, and they almost killed the radio station last year. This is what was told to me by the folks who were training folks at the UNC radio station, but they decided to save it. They figured it was really ridiculous that a university that's got, I think, 20,000 students going to it would not have its own radio station, a training ground for people who might want to go into media, or at the very least, just a way for college kids to blow off steam, to go and share the music that they love, or get on there and talk, or the student council can get on there and have an outlet to everybody that isn't just the school newspaper. So they kept it, and they're running it, and it's a tiny little thing, but hey, we all know the internet is the internet. You know, if you've got a stream, if you've got a website, if somebody logs onto it, they're logging onto it just the same as they could Yahoo or Google or, you know, MSN or sites that get a billion viewers and listeners. So all it takes is a click. So if you're interested, and I hope you are, and you want to hear me go back to doing the kind of show I was doing on Long Island's GBB for a couple of years, where I would just play music for a while. That program was called Filler Up, because it was basically, they would give me a half hour or an hour of time that the station couldn't sell or nobody wanted to bother with. And they said, okay, you can play some music. And I would. So that's what I'm going to do every Saturday morning from, these are Eastern hours I'm giving you, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Saturday. And all you got to do is go to the radio station of the University of Northern Colorado. That's unco.edu. And you have to kind of search for the radio link, because obviously the school doesn't pay very much attention to its radio station, but it's there, and it's streaming 24/7 when there aren't live people doing shows. They have that automated computer thing selecting rock songs, and okay, whatever, but there's generally a lot of student radio going on in the afternoons on weekdays, from about 4 o'clock until close to midnight, but not really much going on in the early part of the day and on the weekends. So I grabbed Saturday mornings. As I said, it's 8 o'clock my time in the mountains, but if you're listening back in New York or in the East Coast, it's 10 to 2 o'clock right on the internet, and it's going to be, I'm going to do my first show on my birthday, which I'm so excited about and proud of, but it's going to be a disaster because I'm first just barely learning the equipment. I've done radio before, obviously. But to navigate a whole new place with whole new buttons and a different switchboard and a different way of working the phones. If you want to see me crash and burn, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow, January 23rd, is the time to do it. So check out unco.edu and look for the radio station there. It's just an easy click away, and put it streaming right on your computer. And you can hear not just, an hour or so of me once every 2 or 3 weeks, but 4 hours of me every Saturday morning. So if you're looking for a way, let's say the Jets are really making your weekends these days because they're in the playoffs, and you're looking for a real downer, well, now you have something else to listen to that'll give you that. By the way, what's going to be on this particular episode of Dave's Gone By? Just up things, just happy things for the most part. We will get kind of nostalgic in a couple of elements. First of all, we're going to do Inside Broadway. We do that almost every episode of this program. That's where we go on the stages of New York and we find out what's happening on and off Broadway, all the big news and gossip, and I do some reviews. And when I was visiting Manhattan just a couple of weeks ago, I saw a few plays and musicals, and I wanted to report on them and review them for you. Tonight we're going to do Finian's Rainbow, which, alas, speaking of the sad things, had to close last weekend. I'll let you know whether it should have stayed open a while longer or if it should have looked to the rainbow and jumped into a pot of something that isn't quite gold. And also, we're going to be part of the Inside Broadway segment. We'll be saying farewell to a poet that I knew. And I don't know many poets, but she was also a theater critic out in Chicago, Effie Mahopoulos. She died this past week or a week and a half ago, so I just wanted to do a little bit of a tribute to her. But the main stem of this program, the real reason you're all tuning in, and the reason I named it Speedily Delivered, is get your nostalgia caps on, or better yet, your delivery person caps, because, well, Mr. Rogers was an icon to even people who didn't really watch the program probably loved and respected Mr. Rogers. And if you don't believe that, just go on YouTube and go searching for some of the clips of him in later years when he was being honored with things. There's a beautiful clip of when he won, I think, an honorary Emmy just a few years back, or in the mid-1990s, and he's introduced by Tim Robbins, and he goes up there, and he's Mr. Rogers, and everybody's really happy to see him and stuff, and it's perfectly nice. And then he just says, you know, I'm not going to make this about me. I'm going to make this about the people who believed in me and loved me and helped me when I was getting started. And if you could all, in this auditorium, take 10 seconds to remember the persons who believed in you and helped you along many, many years ago. And he said, you know, I'll keep the time. And he took just 10 seconds out, and of course, half the auditorium was sobbing and crying and remembering some teacher or some parent or some grandmother or grandfather who helped make them who they were. So, you know, all these tears flowing through the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. It's a wonderful moment, but so true of Fred Rogers. Well, we can't obviously have Fred on the program, but we can have a man who was instrumental in shaping and helping that program in more ways than most people imagine. Most folks think of David Newell as Mr. McNeely, speedy delivery, Mr. Rogers, and he did that for all those episodes of the program, and he's been doing it for years hence. He is sort of still the face of the program. He's doing tons of public appearances around Pittsburgh, where the show used to be taped, and all over the country as well, to foster and continue the work that Fred Rogers did. It's not just that he did a TV program and that's that. He formed this corporation that is for good programming and good things for kids. And David Newell, as Mr. McFeely, even though he's 70 or 71 now, is still out there making it happen and being there for kids and, of course, their parents, and maybe at this point even their grandparents too, who are almost more happy to be there to visit with him and to get an autograph than their little kids are. The other beautiful thing, though, is that people might not realize that Newell was first a production manager on the show. I mean, the appearing as Mr. McFeely was almost a sideline. He was the guy dealing with the props and making the show go forward and working all the things on the studio floor. And then he became the PR guy for the show for many, many years. So it's kind of like, okay, he had this one job that made him a legend, but it was all that real heavy lifting work he was doing all those years too that helped make Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood the great thing that it was. So we will be chatting with the one and only Mr. McFeely, David Newell, on this episode of Dave's Gone By. So do not go away. We will be back to you with all good speed and speedy delivery after we thank our sponsors, Performing Arts Insider, the theater Bible of Broadway since 1944. Go to performingartsinsider.com to find out how you can subscribe, and go to davesgoneby.com to find out how you can subscribe at a really cool discount. Also, please visit TotalTheater.com. That's the parent company of this program, and you can surf hundreds of theater reviews and theater stories from around the world absolutely free at TotalTheater.com. This program is also brought to you by Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway, owned by the Torong family since the 1970s. It's family-owned and operated right there in Hewlett opposite the Lohman store. 516-569-5577. 516-569-5577 for Hewlett, Minuteman Press. And this program is also brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Jeff Goodman, the proprietor there, 797-3229 is his phone number for all your party decorating needs. 516-797-3229. Well, it is time to deliver this program so speedily with me and David Newell, Mr. McFeely. The trolley comes right after these messages.
Meow! I'm not an ordinary cat. I'm a copycat. I love to make copies. So my favorite place is Hewlett Minuteman Press. For three decades, they've been on Broadway in Hewlett, printing booklets, making business cards, designing wedding invitations, and making millions of copies. Meow! How good is Minuteman? Hey, I used to have one life. Now I've got nine. Hewlett Minuteman on Broadway opposite Lohman's. Tell him Toner the Copycat sent you for 10% off.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and it is a beautiful day, not just in the neighborhood, which is what I've been saying about this program for many, many years, but also in the neighborhood. Yes, I'm going to steal that phrase from the great show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, because I actually have stolen a few moments from someone who is very, very deeply connected to that great public television show, as well as the man who invented it, Mr. Fred Rogers. We lost Fred back in 2003, but I'm very excited and very proud to have in the neighborhood today the man who played Mr. McFeely, the one and only David Newell. So, first of all, the two words you have to open with are?
Speedy delivery.
That's right. It's you. It's you. I'm so thrilled. Have you ever estimated how many times in your life you've said that phrase?
Oh, boy, I try to, but I lose count. You know, I've been doing this now for, this is my 42nd year associated with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And so 42 times, countless. You know, just in one taping of a program, I would say it often, and then there'd be the rehearsals, and then every time I do a public appearance, I must say it, you know, every time I meet a child, I'll say speedy delivery. You know, it's got to be over a million. It really has. It's over all those years.
I was thinking about that because I was watching the movie that was made about you, the documentary called Speedy Delivery, and
that's right.
A lot of the documentary was taken up with your going to town fairs and to schools and to these councils where children are, and you're signing autograph after autograph, and of course, you've got to say speedy delivery about 1,000 times a day.
Yeah.
Now.
When I'm out on the road, I do a lot of visiting public stations and their events. They have a lot of family events connected with each public station.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I meet maybe in one time. Are you still there?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, and one time I might meet, say, 400 families, and I say, and everybody, now it's to the point where I'll be at an event, and I'll meet several generations. I'll meet the child who's watching, and then the mother or father, and then the grandparents, who've all had some reference to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and then I'll meet a lot of college kids who come up and say hello because they grew up with the program, and the first thing they'll say is, say it as you say it, a speedy delivery. And I never really thought about it much, but you know how it came about in a way. Well Fred wrote the character into the script of the first program. Mr. McFeely was in the first program, and he was a smaller part at that point. He said, I just want someone to bring in a prop when I need it, and you'll be the delivery man in the neighborhood and so forth. My other job, by the way, was behind the scenes. So I always have had two jobs in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But the first taping, I brought in whatever I brought in. And as I left, I said, well, speedy delivery. And that became a greeting. It really became like hello, goodbye, just like shalom in a way. Or it has many meanings, or aloha, or something like that. I use it in various... and the other thing I do, and I sort of measure when I do it, but if there'll be a family through the line getting an autograph or something, I notice that the mother may be pregnant, and I just sort of size it up, and I'll say, and a special speedy delivery to you. And then that happens, they'll come back, maybe they've come back a year later or 2 years later with their child again, and she said, well, you wished me a speedy delivery, and here's the speedy delivery.
Oh my gosh. It's been
quite a trip working with Fred Rogers over these many years, and it's been so rewarding. And I wish I had another 42 years, and I hope I do, working on some element of his philosophy.
Well, the thing is, it's not as if you just kind of walked off the street into Pittsburgh Public Television and Fred looked at you and said, hand me a prop. I mean, first of all, I think you met when you were doing stuff at the Pittsburgh Public Theater?
Pittsburgh Playhouse.
Oh, Pittsburgh Playhouse, I'm sorry.
Yes,
yeah.
I was working at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. That's where I have some background in theater, and I was working in all stage managing and acting, and I was the host of the Children's Theater. It's called the Pittsburgh Playhouse Junior. That's still in existence, by the way. And I was the clown. They had a clown introducing the children's plays. Now, these were plays that are the old classic, you know, Cinderella and
sure.
Red Riding Hood, etc. And they were done by professional actors, superbly done. And I was a student and had a chance to be the host of the play. We did two matinees and then two matinees a week, plus other plays. But that's where I began working with children, and that evolved into a mutual friend who knew Fred Rogers when they were starting the program. When Fred started the program, went national, he recommended me to Fred, and that's really the first time I met Fred, when I knew who he was, because he was a legend in Pittsburgh already, because he had started a program called the Children's Corner.
Oh.
So one thing led to another, and he hired me. We talked for about an hour, and he hired me right then and there. And
he hired you to do production managing, not to be on the
air. No, both. He told me at the time, but yes, that was what the job was for, production coordinator. I was in charge of all the props, getting the props, and making sure that the costumes were set and everything we had, because we were taping three shows a day, because we did 130 programs that first year.
Wow.
And so that was my job. And then when we had need something, Fred said, well, I need it for this week of programs, I'll need this, this, and this. And I had to go out and get it.
Sure, sure.
Then he said, but, you know, instead of me bringing in a prop and showing it to the children, I'd like to break it up a little bit and have you every so often deliver what I'm going to show the children. And there'd be a knock on the door. Oh, it's Mr. McFeely, and he has a delivery for us. And, you know, I'd tell him, and I'd say, well, today, and then it evolved into, we did these picture-picture films.
Oh, I love those.
Where everybody says that, and especially adults. They'll say that, we'll go out to, if your listeners don't know what they are, we would go to a factory or where they make things, or where they're demonstrating something, and show the process of how crayons are made or how construction paper is made. And I would love those. And occasionally I'd go to the factories, but generally the photographers went and they filmed the process, and then they bring it back and edit the film and then show it to Fred and myself, and we would narrate it. It was me who had to learn all the information because, you know, I was supposedly telling it to Fred, you know, bringing over, say, a box of crayons and saying, well, now here's a box of 74 and here's the colors, and you want to know how they make? Well, I have this film right here, and I'll put in the picture-picture and we'll watch. And then I would proceed to tell Fred how they made things.
See, that was the thing for me. It wasn't even what the documentary was about itself, but it was that I studied film in film school, and I wanted to make movies, and was a big cineast in my teens and whatever. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if a little part of that really came from that moment when you walked in and you handed Fred Rogers, I guess it was a reel of 16mm, maybe it was 8mm film, and you just magically put it behind this little thing. And, of course, I mean, it was the magic of television. It wasn't really happening. But somehow this movie would unspool, and then suddenly there'd be a movie on the screen. I think that really influenced me in some way.
Really? Well, that's good to know. You know, so many different things people have told me that influenced them by watching The Neighborhood. We've had so many letters over the years about parents who said, or from people when they've grown up, by seeing Yo-Yo Ma on the program, I now play a cello, and I teach cello in a community college, or I'm an artist because I saw you visit an art gallery, or various things like that. And that's exactly what Fred wanted to do. He wanted to show children the potpourri of the world, so to speak, or the smorgasbord of the world, and what was available for children to be able to learn. That's so good to hear that you were somewhat inspired by those films.
Oh, I now that I think about it, I think I was also inspired by all the visits to the music store. Every time they would take out an instrument, or I'd pick up the guitar. Was it Mr. Negri, or was it... Yeah.
Negri. Handyman Negri was the handyman on the program. The irony to that is that Joe wasn't that handy, but that's explained. Handyman Negri. But he also is a superb musician. Joe Negri is one of the best guitarists in the business, and has done a lot of work with symphonies around the country and with his own a trio. He's recorded a jazz mass. He's written and recorded the jazz mass. He's a wonderful jazz guitarist. He's done a lot of recording sessions with various singers, and is just a true pro, but he also is a very charming man and loves working with children, and he's still very much active in the music circles around Pittsburgh and the country.
That's great.
He just recorded with Michael Feinstein, he recorded an album of the classic pop tunes with Michael Feinstein.
Oh, wow!
So he's very active and still active. And the other neighbors, Betty Avalon, her career began as an actress in theater in New York, and she's still living in New York. And various people like that have came in, and when we were taping, and Fred would write them in, and then they'd come in, do their part, and then go back where they live. I worked full-time for the company called Family Communications. And oh, by the way...
Yeah.
Family Communications has been the company's name since Fred began it. But just recently, the board of directors of our nonprofit company decided, well, you know, in future years when we do other projects, and we're working on one now, just in the beginning stages, it won't have Fred's name on it. It won't be called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So we need to have something that will say produced by... And we're calling it the Fred Rogers Company. So you're actually the first person I've told that to. It's not a secret, but we're slowly bringing out the name change. And so it'll be the Fred Rogers Company. And we're working on a animated program. It's called Daniel's Neighborhood. And Daniel Tiger, who's...
Oh!
It'll be called Daniel's Neighborhood, and it'll take place mainly in the neighborhood of make-believe. And everything will be animated. Of course, each puppet will be voiced. I think McFeely will be animated, and so that's what we're working on now. So that will say then at the end of Daniel's Neighborhood, produced by Fred Rogers Company, and PBS seems very interested in continuing the legacy of Fred's work, and it's in the works now. We're working on a pilot, and we hope in a year or a half or so we'll have it up and ready. So that's in the meantime.
Yeah.
The Neighborhood is on PBS, but it's only on weekends. But and your listeners could do this. They're going to PBS on their web, pbs.org, and you go and look for Rogers, pbs.org/Rogers. they're going to put 7 programs, Mr. Rogers Neighborhood programs, online that you can view them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have, you can vote on them. There'll be 7 programs that you'll vote for your favorite of those 7. And on March 20th, which is Fred's birthday, they'll play that program that got most votes. So every year we're trying to celebrate Fred's birthday, and we have usually the public stations around the country have a Fred Rogers or Mr. Rogers sweater drive and collect sweaters for the homeless or people in shelters. And so, and there's a Fred Rogers center also in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, which is about 60 miles east of Pittsburgh, that has a archive. And it was just newly built for, it was a wonderful building, and it has the archives and all of Fred's writings, all the scripts and all the digitized programs, and it's a conference center. And on March 20th this year, they're going to have what they call Fred Forward, and it's going to be a conference of people who work in children's television and work with children and just try to help children in the society. It'll be beyond television. It'll be how do we help children.
Everything is iPod this and download that. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned CDs? Well, at Dave's Gone By, we're still making them. Nearly every episode we've ever done is preserved digitally on compact disc and for sale at davesgoneby.org. And at a new low price, $10 per show, shipping and handling included. Add $1 per disc for a personalized autograph and check davesgoneby.org for multiple discounts. P2P, MP3, CD, me.
Speedy Delivery, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, taking time out for my Speedy Deliveries to remind you, you're listening to Dave's Gone By on davesgoneby.com. Speedy Delivery.
You went from being production person and also actor on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood to being the PR guy for the show.
Yeah, you know, in a way that works quite well, because I can go out to different stations and do publicity. When we were active and we were taping almost every day, Fred had very little time to do anything but be in the studio, because he did everything. He was the voice of the puppets. He manipulated. He was the host. He wrote the programs. So I started to go around to different stations just to get the word out about what we're doing. And then when people wanted to interview Fred, I would be the one they contacted. For instance, the Today Show would contact Fred about something that's happening in society in one of his comments, and could he be on the program? And so I'd react to that and try to set it up. And also instigate interviews, too. If we were doing a program that I felt would be helpful for people to know about, I tried to go to the media and say, would you be interested in interviewing Mr. Rogers, et cetera, et cetera. And that was my job, full-time job, still is, really. I still talk about what we're doing and what legacies that we're carrying on and so forth. So I still have 2 jobs, Director of Population and, I guess, Mr. McFeely.
Mr. McFeely. I mean, actually, the one thing that I did not realize until I was looking up some stuff on this was that the last episode of, or official episode of the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood program aired on August 31st, 2001, which was just astonishingly 2 weeks before 9/11. I mean, I kind of wish he had been on for another month or so after that in some kind of way. Did he go back on the air, like, shortly after?
Yes, he did. As a matter of fact, he was on vacation during 9/11. He was in Massachusetts on an island, Nantucket Island. His family has a place on Nantucket Island, and 9/11 happened, and he was stranded. He couldn't get a flight anywhere. He couldn't get back immediately that day. And, of course, PBS wanted him to address the situation, and so we got him back, and he did some PSAs that PBS ran in between programming, in between the children's programming and the adult programming, helped try to to anybody for that matter, but children especially. But he knew that children would be hearing about all this and seeing the images of buildings coming down, etc. And he tried his best to be able to help. And I guess the PSAs were more really directed to adults to be able to address it with their children. But yes, he did do something along those lines. And then he was planning, he died of stomach cancer. And I think he was diagnosed, or at least seriously diagnosed, I think, I don't know the whole beginnings of it, but I just know that in the, about 3 months before his death, he was doing a lot of doctor's visits, and I don't know if they really knew how serious it was. At any rate, he was to do the, and did, on the following January 1st, and he was the Grand Marshal of the Rose Bowl Parade, along with Bill Cosby. And he did that. This was his last public appearance, and I was with him, and he wasn't feeling very well, but Cosby really helped him. Cosby said, "Now, Fred, if you don't want to stand up in the car, they were an open convertible.
Yeah.
We'll sit down and wave. You just tell me when you want to sit down, and I'll help you." And he got him through it. Fred came back and told the staff that he had to do an operation, and he did. And he was in the hospital for about 3 weeks, and we thought they had stabilized, and it, about a week later he began to, the recurrence came, and he did not make it. But my point being, leading up to that, after he stopped the actual daily taping, he wanted to do specials. He wanted to do something on the internet, for instance, maybe doing something with bedtime stories on the internet, so parents could play them for children right before going to bed, or it'd be very interesting to see what he would do now with the availability of the internet and how he could use that in positive ways, because that's exactly what he did with television when it was in its infancy. He was home one summer or spring for college vacation, said, "You know, when I'm out of college, I'm going to go into television." And to his parents, he said, "What do you know about television? You know, you're majoring in music." And he said, "But yes, I've seen what they show on television for children, and it's slapstick comedies all strung together with people throwing pies at each other's face. We can do better than that for children." Now, there's nothing wrong with slapstick comedy, but it, not as a steady diet for children. You know, we need to do better programming for young children. And that's what he did. And Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is the result.
What is the availability? You mentioned that they're going to be showing 7 episodes on PBS and having people vote, but there's a couple of thousand other ones.
Yeah.
Are they on DVD? Are they going to be in syndication of some sort?
Well, we don't know yet. I know that there are about DVDs out. You can get about 4 or 5 DVDs, and there are 2 programs on each DVD. They're available at FCI.org, and you go to /shopping. But I know that PBS has a limited budget, and part of the problem is the expense for the residuals, paying the musicians and paying all the actors. And it's quite sizable if you go back and re-up all of those residuals for, you know, a year. It's a lot of programs and a lot of money. There's a website out now called Save Mr. Rogers that's been helping to get that message out to PBS to see if it's something that they could reconsider. But they are still making it available on weekends on early. That's seemingly what they can afford to do with everything else they have on television. Now, I wish they would reconsider that and show it, because there's so much in the program. You know, the program, everything seems to be animation these days, and The Neighborhood maybe stands out as being old-fashioned, maybe, or slow. But, you know, it may be all of that, but it's still very vital. And I've always said, you don't take Tom Tom Sawyer off the shelf because Mark Twain died. You know, it's still a very classic story. And I think The Neighborhood is too. So we hope that we find another outlet while Daniel's Neighborhood is going on. We hope we find an outlet for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood too in some ways.
I can't believe with all those cable channels out there that there isn't one that wouldn't run Mr. Rogers 24/7.
Yes, and take Fritz philosophy to the next generation.
I'm a little curious about your friendship with Mr. Rogers, because you worked so directly with him and you were a full-time employee, whereas even the other actors who were on the show for years were, you know, they would come, they would go back to their homes, they would do the show. You were 5 days a week, let's say.
It seemed like it was 24/7. I think I spent more time with Fred than did my wife.
Well,
I was there, although we traveled a lot together because we'd go on when Fred would go out to make a speech, I would go with him. If you were going to New York City to be on the do the talk show circuit, I would be with him. And we became very good friends. And his wife and my wife, we'd go out to dinner maybe once a week or twice every 2 weeks or something like that. And we'd go to his home and have dinner. Fred, just to show his personality, there was a series of lectures that he bought, lectures on American literature, starting from Hawthorne up to Arthur Miller, and it was an hour lecture by a professor from a college on literature, and there were about 20 of them, and it would start with a very early Nathaniel Hawthorne and go through Arthur Miller. So every so often, Fred would say, well, why don't you and Nan, that's my wife's name, come over and we'll have school tonight. And we'd have dinner and then we'd go watch a lecture on American literature. Or literature, I think maybe it was world literature. At any rate, it was quite something, and Fred loved to read. This is the genesis, I guess, of his getting that series of lectures. That was his passion, music and reading. When we'd go to a city, he'd look up the bookstore or the local library. Bookstores were easier because they're more central to a hotel, and go in and just browse. He loved to read. And he would encourage that and encouraged it on the program, too.
Oh, of course.
He thought television, in a way, was one of the worst things we ever did for children. It really took away from their time to read. Going back to our friendship, he was a very close friend. He was the best correspondent, and he kept up with his high school friends. His teachers in grade school he would have notes from and write to. He was such a thoughtful person. And everybody who worked for our company, there were still about 15, 18 people, very small company, Fred would have their names or birthdays or anniversaries in his little pocket calendar. And on your birthday, you would get a card or a phone call from Fred saying happy birthday or happy anniversary or happy graduation, whatever it might be. He was a very thoughtful man. It wasn't an act that you saw on television. He was such a very caring person and really thought and respected his friendships. And he respected childhood. And that's why I think the program was so successful in many ways, because I think children knew that. They couldn't articulate it, but in some way they knew the man they were seeing on television respected who they were and respected childhood. And I think that came through. Adults could see it, I think. But I don't know if children could see it on that level, but they saw something.
Was there anything that would surprise us about him? Because it's not surprising that he loved literature, certainly not surprising that he loved music, or even that he was really the same off the air as he was on. But is there a little tidbit or anecdote or any kind of thing that we would go, really, Fred Rogers like that?
Let's see. He was a vegetarian. That doesn't surprise you that much.
Okay.
And he swam an hour a day. That doesn't surprise
right.
you that much either. He had a great sense of humor. Great sense of humor. And occasionally, he would tell a few off-color jokes at times.
No. Really?
Not seriously, but he'd be a wonderful audience. Sometimes the crew or one of the engineers would come in and tell a off-color joke, and Fred would laugh heartily with the rest of them. You know, he was not a prude by any means, or he was not especially a wimp by any means either. You know, there's a lot of everybody has taken off on Fred and done a parody of Fred. Everybody. You've seen some of them, probably Eddie Murphy, and you've heard radio DJs. Everybody said, can you say? You've heard all of that. And he was a good audience. To be in an audience, he enjoyed good performances, too. He liked to be in an audience. In fact, I think he liked being in an audience more so than being a performer. He felt sort of uncomfortable being a performer. When he wasn't, that's why he was always himself on television. But when he came to the point where we did these children's concerts sometimes with the symphonies, we'd do the songs and he'd come out and do some of the puppets. He felt that he was performing then and didn't enjoy that performing aspect of what he felt that that wasn't being a communicator. He felt he was performing. He really thought of himself as a communicator.
Now you, I assume, do enjoy the performative aspects of being Mr. McFeely, of going to these places, dressing up, and in the documentary Speaking Delivery, they show you taking very great pains when you're doing the makeup and you're doing, it wouldn't occur to me that you'd be wearing makeup, but you know, at least the mustache, and you have the wig, and then the hat on top, and you know, the perfectly pressed suit. Do you really love that, or is it just a way of getting the word out of other things that Family Communications and Fred Rogers Company is doing?
No, I really enjoy that. I really enjoy going out to various events. For instance, just recently, I did with the St. Xavier University outside of Chicago, I did Peter and the Wolf with their orchestra.
Oh.
As Mr. McFeely. And I would do Peter and the Wolf, and then I brought some of the puppets and showed those to the audience, and we did a few Mr. Rogers songs, and then afterwards I'd do a meet and greet. Just recently at WQED in Pittsburgh, that's the public station in Pittsburgh, we had an open house, and we invited people to come in to see the set, the neighborhood of make-believe set. We set it all up in the studio where it was taped, and invited people to come in to see it. And I was there meeting and greeting everybody who came in. And we thought maybe we'll have 500. Well, we had 5,000.
Of course.
And it was a marathon. And, you know, I get invigorated in a way because I learned so much about what the program meant to people and the stories. I only wish I had a microphone on me to hear all these stories or record all these stories that just as you said about the film and how it inspired you somewhat, that's what I heard over and over again.
Right.
Many different aspects of the program inspired these people to be who they are today or to take a chance and go out and study music or go to college and, okay, I'll take up whatever they saw in Mr. Rogers.
Seriously.
That is the power of television, you know. And Fred always said, you never know who's watching. So that's why he wanted to make the program as best as he could and use it for the good. He always said, how do you make goodness attractive? You know, you can always put together a shoot-em-up movie and with a lot of action and violence and color and so forth. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's an artistic endeavor, too. But that's easier to sell. But how do you make goodness attractive? And I think Fred did it. he did make it attractive. But you don't have to be violent to make money with a product. You can get an audience without being violent all the time. I mean, that's part of life, yes. He wasn't denying that. But he was just trying to make a point of, let's use television the best way we can. And Fred was never, he was never in the clouds. He always knew there was a real world out there, and he wanted to show the best to the children and protect them in a way from what's out there, and prepare them, I guess is the best word. You know, if you know what's coming up, you'll be able to handle it better. He always said that whatever is mentionable is manageable.
Wow. Okay.
And so, you know, Fred was quite something. I don't know if your listeners, a lot of people think that the program is a nice little kiddie show, but he was quite a very intelligent man, very intelligent. And what you didn't know about him, on television you saw the serious side of Fred, but he did have that wonderful sense of humor that I think people would be surprised to know about. And occasionally, a little off, he'd laugh at an off-color joke as hearty as the other guy would if it was a very good off-color joke.
Right.
Not something just raw, but something that had some wit to it, I guess. And, you know, he liked David Letterman. He thought David Letterman was very whimsical when he first started out. He thought he was funny. And you wouldn't think that. And so there are people like that that he
probably liked Steve Allen as well, I'll bet.
Yeah, he did. And likewise, Steve Allen and, in fact, Steve Allen's wife and Steve Allen's son gave an award to Fred. Steve Allen's name, a humanitarian award in his name, and they presented it to Fred. I, in fact, picked it up. Fred was taping, so I had to go to pick up the award. So, yes, he did like Steve Allen.
Dave's Gone By wants you to advertise on the show. Reach our loyal audience with your message at prices you can afford even in this economy. Call 516-295-1511. 295-1511 or visit davesgoneby.org for info. You'll want us just as much as we want you.
We're finishing our conversation, our delightful conversation in the neighborhood here with a man from the real neighborhood, David Newell, better known, of course, as Mr. McFeely. Is there one defining memory or moment that you particularly cherish of your relationship with Fred?
Oh, there's so many. I'll do two quick ones.
Sure.
One was a guest we had whose name is Margaret Hamilton. She's the Wicked Witch of the West.
Sure.
And we had her on to, because a lot of, that movie scared a lot of people, and to this day people say, boy, that really helped me when I saw that the witch was an actress and it wasn't a real witch and real and scary. And so we had her on the program to come in as Margaret Hamilton, the actress, and tell children that that's her job. She was an actress and she played this witch, but she's not a mean person. She was just telling a story. And she became a good friend, and every weekend she would call us and my wife and I, and we became good friends.
Yeah.
She said, just call me Maggie, Aunt Maggie. And I cherish those moments with Margaret Hamilton. She's a lovely, lovely woman and a true pro. And the other is the very last taping we did, I sang the Speedy Delivery song with Fred, and then I exited. But usually I would sing the song and say, well, see you around the neighborhood. But on the very last program, I sang the song and then just shook his hand, and no one would know that I did it purposely, because I wanted to, that was my signal that thank you very much for the many years, thank you for your friendship, thank you. It was just loads of thanks in that one handshake. And so that, I cherished that moment too. And it came sort of to me as I was standing there, we were taping, and it came in my head, I think, I've got to do something before I leave. What? And I shook his hand, something that simple and that natural. is a cherished moment for me, and that's on tape, so I have that forever.
That's right. And it's a thrill that we have so much on tape, so much forever, of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and of course your part in it as Mr. McFeely, which the one last thing that we forgot to even mention was that the character was initially going to be called Mr. McCurdy.
That's right. Mr. McCurdy was the president of the Sears Roebuck Foundation, the people who gave us the money for 25 years to do Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And Fred wanted to thank him. So he called the delivery man, Mr. McCurdy, and about 20 minutes before we were going to tape, the phone rang. It was Sears, and it was Mr. McCurdy. He said, "We love everything you're doing. We like the scripts. Everything's fine, but please don't call the delivery man McCurdy. It looks a little self-serving. So maybe you should think up another name." And Fred said, "Well, we will do that." And hung up the phone and said, "We've got to get you a name. We were taping in 20 minutes. McFeely, because Fred's name is Fred McFeely Rogers.
Right.
That's the real Mr. McFeely was Fred's grandfather. And so I guess I'm carrying on the name McFeely, too."
So to carry on that kind of legacy in so many ways, I'm sure you do feel honored and very
I do.
Special and blessed about that.
You know, as I told you earlier, or I might have told you earlier, I thought I had a job for 1 year when Fred hired me. I thought, okay, we'll do 130 programs, and then I'll move on. I'll move back to Los Angeles where I was living. And here I am 40-some years later and still delivering, really. I'm doing an appearance next week at the local children's museum, and I'm traveling to a college in February to show the Speedy Delivery movie and meet with students who grew up with the program. So now there's two audiences in a way: the college kids who we show the program to, and they remember, and then I do Q&A afterwards, and then still to these events where children and families come to. So it's been a real, well, wonderful, and I look forward to these appearances. I look forward to meeting people who grew up in the program and hearing their stories. So it's been very rewarding.
Well, it has been such a reward for us to have you, David Newell, in the neighborhood. Please, please, as we go, say it one more time.
Okay, well, speedy delivery.
Dave's Gone By listeners know I love a good play on words, but let me say a good word on plays, my plays, in a lovely book called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, comedies that range from strange to deranged, fun to read, and unmistakably Dave. Just $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Put down that crappy bestseller and pick up some laughs. 516-295-1511 or davesgoneby.org for Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World.
I wanna get married.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TogleTheater.com.
And Inside Broadway we go on this birthday episode of Dave's Gone By. First, we look at the news of the Rialto, what's going on the stages of New York, and also all around the country as well. Kind of interesting news that on February 7th, that date will be the first time in 15 years that the musical Rent isn't on Broadway, and it isn't on tour either. The tour is actually closing on that date when it hits Sacramento, California. I'm sure there'll be other tours and certainly a zillion high school productions, but kind of interesting that Jonathan Larson and all that happened 15 years ago. Amazing, amazing stuff. Also, speaking of longevity, the Phantom of the Opera, well, that is going strong and stronger by the day. Congratulations to them. They're celebrating yet another anniversary on January 26th. That's this Tuesday. Phantom opened at the Majestic Theater in 1988, and shows no signs of vacating till 2088, so congratulations to them on that. What happened in the commercial theater this past week? Well, Roundabout Theater Company opened a revival of Noel Coward's play Present Laughter. It's a comedy which stars Victor Garber and Harriet Harris and Brooks Ashmanskas, who's getting a lot of notices, positive and negative, because he really goes out there with his role. He's not just playing it safe. Well, the reviews were up and down, but mostly up, actually. The Daily News loved it. New York Times liked it a whole lot. Hollywood Reporter, not so much. And John Simon for Bloomberg said, not really, but hey, it's still Noel Coward, so you're not going to have a terrible time either. So Present Laughter, I think, is playing till mid-March. It's a Roundabout Theater production, so you might want to check it out. Well, speaking of plays that are going to be opening very, very soon, this Thursday, January 28th, there's a new Donald Margulies play, yay, called Time Stands Still. And Daniel Sullivan, who's just a really, really fine director, he was the guy who directed Proof a few years back, he's going to stage Time Stands Still. And it stars, dig this cast, Laura Linney, Eric Bogosian, Brian D'Arcy James, and that cutie from Clueless, Alicia Silverstone. Talk about, I mean, they are hedging their bets. I've got a new play, but even if people aren't interested in plays anymore, sometimes we wonder about that, they've really front-loaded it with folks from both theater and TV and real names and movies, too. It's at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater, and if you know Donald Margulies, maybe it's because he also wrote Collected Stories. That's a two-person play about a young college student and her mentor. Well, that's going to be revived also by Manhattan Theater Club on Broadway at the same theater right after Time Stands Still closes. So it's kind of an all-Donald Margulies spring we'll be having. That's kind of neat. Anyway, have to make a little bit of time in this Inside Broadway for a little bit of bad news. I wanted to say farewell to a person that I knew several years back. I haven't seen her in more than a decade or really been in contact with her. She was a Chicago poet and also a theater critic for a time. Her name was Effie Mahopoulos, and she died of breast cancer on January 14th. And she lived the real artist poet's life. Very little money, very little anything for health insurance. I don't think she had it. As a matter of fact, friends had to help chip in when she was diagnosed, and then she was in a hospice for a while. That's actually where she died. But let's not remember that part. Let's remember that Effie was the founder of a poetry chapbook called Omation Press, and she was once kind enough to give me a copy of one of her books from there. And she's best known for her cycle of poems called The Moon Cycle. I'm not a big poetry person, so I guess I didn't appreciate her work or the kind of work she was doing for other people at that time. I was much more into theater. I will say that she got a master's in English from Northwestern University back in 1974, and the main reason that I knew her was that she was a theater critic for the first publication that I put together. You know, people might know that I'm the co-publisher of Performing Arts Insider. That's the magazine that helped sponsor the show, this program. So before that, I started a publication called This Week on Stage, which was telling everybody little reviews of all the shows on and off Broadway and also all the factual information about them. And then that grew to carry not just New York, but theater criticism from all over the country. And it expanded, and it, you know, I couldn't do it week by week. It was just killing me, so I made it a monthly, This Month on Stage. But one of the first writers there who was covering theater and dance from the Chicago area was Effie Mahopoulos. And the interesting thing is, and I feel a little bad about this now, but the thing I most remember about her was she, this was before computers, or it was the very, very beginning of computers. I shouldn't say that. I mean, it was still working on a dot matrix, and it was black and white or black and green screen kind of things. But I was still accepting most of the work coming in on plain old hard copy, people handing in typewritten reviews, and then I'd retype all that information and lay it out and set it for the magazine. I mean, this was Luddite times. Well, that was fine, and you know, I didn't mind doing that. I'm a pretty fast typist. But when I got reviews from Effie Mahopoulos, she would take an 8.5 by 11 page of paper, or usually it was a legal size piece of paper, white paper, which she would fill all the way from the left to all the way in the right with single-spaced typewritten. And there was, you know, most people leave an inch margin on the side and an inch on the top and the bottom. There was no such thing as a margin with Effie, nor was there any space between anything. So if there was ever a mistake or a crossover or a typeover with a typewriter, you actually had to read through it, and she would go slightly, like half a line above the line, to correct it. It was the most unreadable. If you can imagine, I mean, granted, handwriting is probably worse on some level, but I couldn't imagine that a typewritten page could actually be almost indecipherable. And yet she would turn these in, and I think she typed also on both sides of the paper. So literally, the thing was a wall of ink that she would hand in. I would beg her, Effie, please, have a margin, have a little break between things. But, you know, she's a poet. She sees things in a different way, and that didn't seem to occur to her, that you need to have white space on the page. It would for her poems, of course, but not for just, you know, getting stuff that's going to be retyped anyway. And I just remember I was in some kind of cafe or something in Chicago, and exasperated, because I kept for a while begging her to change her ways and be neater and give more space and make the thing look more readable. And it just was like knocking my head into a wall. And it built up in me, and I was kind of yelling at her in front of other people, just saying, you know, how can you expect to be a professional critic or person if you're turning in work that looks like this? And she seemed really, you know, upset. And I think I apologized, I hope I apologized to her later. And she did get a little better. Go figure. So, you know, we all have our moments in this world, but I'm sorry that is my most memorable encounter and moment with Effie Mahopoulos. I hope she remembered other better things, the fact that, you know, I published a lot of her work, both in theater and in dance, and that I appreciated the stuff that she was doing for poets, and that she herself was a poet. And if you want to see Effie Mahopoulos' work, a little bit of it, you can go to YouTube. There's one clip of her where she did a collaboration with a painter named James Mesplé. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And it's kind of poetry with a little music and also set to his paintings. So they would bounce one off the other. And you also get to see her, and she talks a little bit. And it's a pretty neat piece. So look for Effie Mahopoulos, Mihopoulos, on YouTube. And, you know, it's a shame that she had to go kind of quickly and in the way that she did. And a little sorry that I didn't get to know her better in the last bunch of years, because seemed like a really... I mean, she moved away from theater and gone completely towards poetry, which is fine. So our paths would not have crossed. But maybe they shall cross one day, many, many, many years hence. And I'll apologize once more, and then I'll listen to some more of her poetry. We'll be right back with more of Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By, right after this.
If you have no idea what to see on Broadway this season, have I got a magazine for you. Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway and beyond. Every show is listed with enough information to make you a theater expert, just like the professionals who've relied on PAI for 64 years. Get the most recent issue at PerformingArtsInsider.com. Dave's Gone By listeners get a steep discount on subscriptions, so visit PerformingArtsInsider.com for Broadway the best way.
I hear a bird, a glockamora bird. It well maybe he's bringing me a cheering word. I hear a breeze, a river shining breeze. It well maybe it's followed me across the seas. Then tell me, please, how are things in Glockamora, with that little brook still leaping there? Does it still run down to Donnycove, through Killybeg, Kilcarry and Kildare? How are things in Glockamora? Is that willow tree still weeping there? Does that laddie with a twinkling eye come whistling by? And does he
Maya's teach, weepin' willow and each brook along the way, and each lad that comes up with him to Rahilin.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and to Inside Broadway, where, yes, I was inside Broadway just a couple of weeks ago, catching up on some of the shows that I'm not getting to see now that I'm living in Colorado. And one that I did catch, and I'm glad I did, was a revival of Finian's Rainbow, the Yip Harburg and Burton Lane show. That's really a very, very sweet classic. I mean, the songs that came from this show include Our Things in Glacamora, which we just played, of course, and Look to the Rainbow, and Old Devil Moon, and If This Isn't Love, and of course the very, very funny song When I'm Not Near the Girl I Love, which is some of the best lyrics ever written for the musical theater. So, and it's been such a long, long time since this show was properly revived in New York. And what they did was, this was one of those encores shows. If you all know that at City Center, many years back, they started this thing where they would do musicals, but they wouldn't have whole big productions. They wouldn't have sets or costumes or anything. They would just get really good actors and singers, get them up there in front of microphones with the scripts, and maybe dress them up a little bit, and just do the show with the book in hand, and let the music come through, and let the show come through that way. And it became a really, really successful thing, to the point where a couple of the shows went past that, and of course Chicago is the best example of a show that came out of encores and went on to a much, much longer life. Well, this too, everybody loved Finian's Rainbow when they brought it back at encores just, I guess, about a year or so ago. And they were saying, we got to bring it to Broadway. So they did. And it's a very nice show. Is it a hit? Sorry. No, it ended up closing last week, and it's not quite fair. But I sort of expect that. I mean, these days, you know, you either need an epic like Wicked or something with a lot of pop music like Mamma Mia, or maybe that upcoming Frank Sinatra show that they're going to be doing with Twyla Tharp dancing. And it isn't all modern and kinetic like Fela or Spring Awakening. It's just a sweet, nice, tender, lovely show. Nothing less, sometimes quite a bit more. And as far as the cast that they brought to Broadway, really good people. I mean, Kate Baldwin played Sharon. She's the young woman who's come from Ireland with her father. She's hoping to meet a man, or really hoping to get back to Ireland, too. And Baldwin is really good. She was probably a little bit old for the role, but as soon as she opened her mouth and started singing, I mean, I'm not Irish, but when she started singing How Are Things in Glacamora or Look to the Rainbow, I felt like a sixth Clancy brother, you know. Jim Norton is just right as Finian. He's her father. He drags her there. He's a sweet, puckish old man. That's exactly what you want for the role. Cheyenne Jackson, you know, the Broadway heartthrob, perfectly fine as Woody. And Christopher Fitzgerald, he played Og. He's the leprechaun who's trying to protect the pot of gold. You know, I was unsure about him in the early part of the show, but when he gets to do that When I'm Not Near the Girl I Love and make it that great 10:30 number that it is, kind of like Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat in Guys and Dolls, that whole thing that just kind of lifts the second act with this joyful, funny bit. I was totally on his side by then. It was really, really good work. Well, one thing, and one of the reasons I think Finian's Rainbow might not have caught on, wasn't all that crazy about the set. And come on, it's Finian's Rainbow. It should have this beautiful, magical set. And it wasn't. It was kind of construction papery and foamy. And, you know, that hurts these days when you're charging $100 for a show. You want it to look like $100 or $1 million. So I am sorry that Finian's Rainbow didn't follow the rainbow to its pot of gold, but I'm glad I got to see it, and glad I got to tell you about it inside Broadway.
We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
If you're like me, you agree that television could always be a little more Jewish. Well, our prayers are answered. Rabbi Saul Solomon, that's me, hosts Shalom Dammit. I do Bible studies, sermons, pap smears, whatever I damn well want. See all the episodes anytime on YouTube.com. Shalom Dammit, it's Jewish and it's proud!
Dave's gone by.
There goes the neighborhood and the neighborhood on this edition of Dave's Gone By on my birthday, which was made so special by all the great folks in my life and the folks who help with this show, including our sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway, Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944, TotalTheater.com, Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party decorating needs, and also please everybody check out our .com. We have it back. DavesGoneBy.com. A couple of reminders for you. Catch Rabbi Saul Solomon's Shalom Dammit on YouTube anytime. The 10 episodes are still there. Just look for Rabbi Saul Solomon. Also, you might want to catch Joyce Keller's program. She's the psychic host of America's longest-running live radio show for body, mind, and spirit, on the air since 1987 at WGBB Radio on Long Island, Wednesdays at 11. And catch my new music show Saturday mornings, 10 to 2 Eastern Time, on UNC Student Radio. That's unco.edu/UNC Radio. I'll put a link on the homepage of davesgoneby.com so you can catch it there, too. It's not on the FM band. It's just like this one, just on the net for you. Thank you so much again on this birthday day to all the folks in my life, Mama and Papa Weil, for their love and support, and glad that Papa Weil's feeling better after his little tumble a week or so ago. Love to Mom and Dad Lefkowitz, without whom, .. and of course my beloved wife, Joyce Weil, without whom, .. on to infinity. Well, time to leave the neighborhood on this birthday, but biggest thank you of all for this show to David Newell, a.k.a. Mr. McFeely. Please go to FCI.org to find out all the things that they're doing to continue the great legacy of Mr. Rogers. And speaking of a legacy, also wanted to do a very, very quick remembrance of Kate McGarrigle, the folk singer who died this past week. She was the ex-wife of Loudon Wainwright III and also the mother of Rufus and Martha Wainwright. So she passed, and we're going to close with perhaps her best known and one of her prettiest songs. But I will be back, God willing, in just a week or two with a 325th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz, 1 year older, wishing you good night, all your wishes coming true, and gone by.